two of the ones that come up most in my world as I work with young people is, am I enough? Meaning, am I enough to be loved or valued? If you apply that to God, right? Am I enough for God to love me? And am I safe? Am I safe with God?
You are listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javet, a podcast that presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry. Here is your host.
Hello and welcome back to Our Urban Voices. I'm your host, Dr. Alphonse Javet. Today, we are joined by Dr. Tanita Maddox. Dr. Maddox is the National Director for Generational Impact for Young Life and serves as an Associate Regional Director in the Mountain West Young Life region. With an expertise in contextualizing the gospel for Gen Z, Dr. Maddox has been featured on the Holy Post podcast and has been published in the Great Commission Research Journal, the Journal of Youth and Theology, and more. She has served as a young life leader with adolescents for over 26 years and serves as a volunteer young life leader in her local community. We are talking about something very important here. It's relevant to every parent, every pastor, mentor, ministry leader. This is a topic that we all need to understand. And the topic is, what is good news to Gen Z? Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Maddox. How are you?
I'm so happy to be here. Please call me Tanita.
Good to hear that. And yes, let's get to this with more familiar tone to this interview, because I think this is a very important topic for parents. And I want to make sure that our conversation is relevant to them. But before that, I want to make sure that they understand us as human beings, as mentors, parents, and pastors, and those kind of things. So let's start with your family life. They know my family life already. But I want to give you the opportunity to connect with the audience by sharing a little bit about your family, where you come from. Tell us very briefly about your family.
Yeah, so I'm a second-gen American. My dad is first-gen, so his parents are from the Philippines and Mexico. My mom is white and from the Midwest, so we got a crazy blend of all the cousins, everyone. It's just a full blend of a lot of different backgrounds, so that's kind of what I grew up around and with down in the Southwest, and now I'm married, been married for 20 years, and have two little boys.
Good. So it's good that now your audience know that you are a daughter and also a mom, a parent. So that's good. Let's start with the idea of generational gap. The idea of generational gap or disconnect is not a new one. What would you say are the major characteristics of Gen Z that might differ from the generations before it?
Yeah, it's not new that people have said, oh, kids these days, right? That's been around for a long, long time. What happened with Gen Z was their generation is marked by technological change through smartphones, interactive technology they have access to for a very long time. That changed how they related to themselves, how they related to the world around them compared to those who were bringing them up, who are their parents and grandparents. And it created this entire other culture that they exist in that has different language, values, taboos, mores. because they're unseen in those digital spaces, it's really hard for older generations to see what's going on with our young people.
What are the people in the Gen Z generation care about or are concerned about? What are the hot button issues for them?
Yeah, I just want to, before I answer that, I want to remind everyone, when we talk about generations, we're talking about like very broad generalizations. This is a large group of people. We're talking about 2 billion people worldwide, you know, and about a quarter of the U.S. population. So there's going to be nuance for individuals. So whenever we talk about generational study, we're always using these really broad blankets. So broadly, we'd say our young people care about authenticity. Older generations would use the word integrity, meaning like you are who you say you are all the time. You're not hiding who you are. You're not presenting different than who you are. They care about justice and seeing that things are set right in the world, that unjust systems or marginalization or oppression, they care about that. They care about creation. They care about the earth and caring for it and stewardship of that. I don't know if I put this in as a category of caring, but they have a high value for trust, and so they don't give it away very easily. Some people have talked about we're in a low trust world or a low trust culture, but I think what it really is that our young people actually see a very high value in their trust. And so instead of giving it away first and seeing if how you're going to do with it, they're going to watch you first and then decide whether or not you're worthy of giving their trust away. And then, of course, they care about mental health. That can go without saying.
Wow. I was just trying to think about, I like that when you said authenticity, you also compare that with the older generation, the word integrity. So I was just thinking about, okay, for justice, that could be fairness, because fairness has been in our vocabulary or in our culture for a very long time. Older generations still talk about fairness. Not as a demand, but as something that should be reflected at workplace or all those things. But the idea of definitely creation stewardship is something I think interesting in this generation. And then of course we're gonna elaborate on this a little bit. But this is definitely something I didn't think about. Low trust is not that they can't trust. It's just they value trust so much that they give very carefully. You got to earn it, it seems like, or you have to be authentic enough that they can give that to you. That's pretty neat. So you talk about 7 core questions that Gen Z is asking about God. So what are a few of the things that Gen Z really want to know about God?
Yeah, these questions are based in their experiences and their values and their worldview. So really asking these questions about life, but because they're asking about life, they are asking them about God. So two of the ones that come up most in my world as I work with young people is, am I enough? Meaning, am I enough to be loved or valued? If you apply that to God, right? Am I enough for God to love me? And am I safe? Am I safe with God? So those are two big ones I hear a lot.
So when you say, am I safe with God, what does that mean? Enough, I understand. But what do you mean by, am I safe with God?
Well, this generation has a high value of safety. One of the top questions even psychologists have identified that Gen Z is asking is, am I safe or is it safe? Safe is a very hard word for us to get our brains around, because the expansion of the definition of safe has broadened it very, very widely. So it's not just physical safety, it's emotional safety. We hear psychological safety, safety from disagreement, safety from being uncomfortable, safety from risk, safety from failure, all these pieces. It's gone further and further and further out. And at the same time, it's very individualized. So each person has their own definition of what it means for them to be safe, or what a safe environment looks like. And because that word is being used a lot, especially when we talk about in work with our young people, we can't just throw around saying, I'm a safe person, this is a safe place, because there's so many definitions for it. So anytime we're using it, we better explain it in concrete terms. But if you think about a generation growing up with a cultural idea of safety, that's kind of always being happy, always being comfortable, always being successful, if that's kind of the definition of safety, then you start looking at the Bible. It doesn't take very long into it to see people who are uncomfortable, who are in dangerous situations, all in these risky places. And so it's really looking at, well, if safety is good, and God is good, then how does God define safety? How are our young people defining safety? And where can we answer that question? Is it safe in scripture with them?
Hmm. Well, I'm thinking about the idea of safe, especially you brought in your conversation, you prompted two things. Often we hear this is a safe place. What we are doing in saying is assuring the people that they can trust us, or the trust that their conversation will be confidential, right? So in your earlier comment, you talk about those low trust, which did intrigue my interest in this topic. So low trust, is it possible that they are not, because they have such a high value in trust, So if somebody is saying that oh, this is a safe place, they are evaluating within whether it is or not, because it goes back to earlier, you also in your opening statement, you said the authenticity, right? So they want to see that, okay, if I say they can't take my word. They have to see the authenticity in me. They have to evaluate me first before they can open themselves to me. And it's not enough that I say it's a safe place. Where is this idea of safety is coming from? Whether that is the safety of a being, their values, or their personhood, et cetera, where is it coming from?
Yeah. Well, even just as you were sharing, you said, when I say this is a safe place, this is what I mean, right? And you gave a definition for it. I think that that trust and safety place comes in those contexts. If you don't explain what I mean by this is a safe place and they're operating with a different definition, if you break that, you are unsafe and you are untrustworthy. So they all kind of roll into one another on those things. There have been some people who've speculated that because Gen X has primarily been the generation that's raising Gen Z, during Gen X's childhood, which is my childhood, it's the first time that kidnappings of children were on national news. It's the first time that kids' faces appeared on the milk carton, when stranger danger became part of the cultural colloquium. And some have speculated, hey, this is the first time people went, hey, kids can get hurt. There's people out there who can hurt our kids. And so my generation, like Gen X, was, while we're well known for being kind of wild and out in the streets and all those things, we still had this thing of we had a family password in case someone tried to pick you up. You know, you were aware of your surroundings. We knew the world was dangerous. And so now, as we've gotten to be adults, having that in your mind of kids can get hurt and then the world is dangerous. There's some ideas that Gen X changed how they parented, and brought in safety as a high value for kids.
I'm just thinking in my own way as I'm hearing you. If the mom was brought in with that kind of mindset that I want to protect my child, and the child is brought up in that, like, okay, mom is a safe place. She's trying to, and the world is not a safe place. So that I got it from your conversation. But then I'm also putting another thing that I think I'm adding, or maybe that's what I'm hearing from you, are interpreting what you're saying from my understanding. It could be that the lack of confidence that was offered, whether that is the confidence of, you said you could be running around out there when you were a child and doing things out in the, out in the street late, no problem, right? But because of that protectiveness, we have perhaps unknowingly taken away that confidence that comes with. I was just talking to a missionary who was going to Pakistan. I'm Pakistani immigrant. So he was just checking with me some of the things. And I said, well, one thing you should not do, don't be over frank, don't be overly happy over there, and don't be rude either, which is so true, because when last time I was there, my sister said, you are not Pakistani anymore. You can't go out by yourself. You need to bring my husband with you or go with one of the brothers. I said, why? I'm speaking Punjabi. I'm wearing Pakistani clothes. And she said, no, you laugh too much. You walk too fast. You walk straight. Your smile is on the gestures. And I'm just thinking about it. And I was like, okay, so perhaps what we have done is unintentionally, we have given our children, or Gen Zs in this case, that kind of attitude where they are not as confident. Because, and that's the advice I gave to this missionary. I said, when you go there, you need to project confidence. Because if you are confident, they will see it. They'll step away because they know that, oh, he's not a new person, even though you're new, but they don't know that you're new. And therefore, they're going to act differently around you. Otherwise, they're going to eat you up without any problem. I'm just hoping and praying that while we understand our Gen Zs, we also find the confidence that doesn't come from us, comes from the Lord, because that is eventually, even my confidence is in Him, not what I have or what I don't have. So I'm trying to connect back to the idea of what are those few things that Gen Z really want to know about God. And I think it would be nice that they come to know that you can trust Him. And in His confidence, you can walk and not worry about, because I can see the pain of this raising them, because this is, if that's my doing, raising them in a way, now they are afraid of taking those challenges and then accusing them of like, why you're afraid of, that's also not right, because I brought them up like that, right? So why are, go on, sorry, forgive me, go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, I think about this, like, so I'm a runner. This probably the safest place for me to run is on a treadmill in my house, because, you know, I'm at home. There's no cars driving toward me, you know, all those things. But I prefer to run outside, but I did have to learn how to run outside, especially as a female. So you learn, you know, you make eye contact with people. So people see you recognize their face. You run on a certain right side of the road. You don't run the same path over and over again. You never block all your hearing. You make sure you can hear cars and people. You pay attention to the makes and models of car that drive by you. Cause that was, I was taught, but I was taught all those things as growing up as a runner. Hey, it's not super safe. So here's how you protect yourself in that environment. I can see the temptation to say, no, I don't want to teach you all those things. It's too scary out there. And I'm not sure you're going to remember all of them. And the risk is pretty high that something could happen. So let's keep you on the treadmill in the house. It's
very good
for
illustration.
Right? As a parent, I can watch you. It's easier for me emotionally. It's harder emotionally to let my child go out.
Yeah, that's very good illustration right there. It reminds me, Francis Chan, one of his recent book, he wrote this. He said, it's interesting that when we raise children, we don't raise them to be in the house. We raise them to prepare them to be in the world. When it comes to, his point was, when it comes to church, we try to keep the church inside and we don't raise them to be out, which is actually the purpose. And I think going back to training our children, and just putting them on that in-house treadmill, in other words, or do whatever you want to do, stay in, it has its own flaws and hurts that we cannot see the full potential of that later on. We see the full, not potential, but the impact of that later on. And then yet, and I see that also because I grew up playing with nothing. I mean, basically sticks and rocks and whatever is around, that becomes the playing toys and tools, right? But now my kids don't even know what to do. You give them everything, whatever you give them, it's just not enough. And now I'm not talking about the kids. I'm also talking about the Gen Z as well. It's just patience, creativity is lost, at least in my, you work with them, you have your, I'm just talking about my perspective. It seems like boredom comes fast. It seems like disassociation comes fast. It's better to be internal than external. All these kind of things being on, and earlier you also mentioned technological challenges because they're attached to that. So that's their comfort. It's almost their pacifier. And all these things are creating trouble for the church too, because those kids are responsibility of the church as well. So let me ask this, why are traditional ministry methods not working so well with Gen Z?
Oh, well, I think we often forget that generations are also cultures. So you're taking tools that were created for one culture and then applying it to another culture and expecting it to work. I think if we put it in those terms, then we'd go, of course, it doesn't work the same way, because we are working with a different group of people who want to communicate differently, who have different, like you said, like we talked about, safety and trust are big things. And so in my own experience, realizing that I was answering questions that our young people were not asking, you know, and ignoring the ones they were. It's not to say that our theology and doctrine isn't relevant. It's, but we haven't explained how it is relevant to their life. And so when I talk about the divinity and humanity of Jesus, which is that is a cornerstone belief, right? It all goes out the window if you do not believe that Jesus is both divine and human 100%. But that was facing a room of Gen Zers who go, so what? Like, how does that impact life? Why does that matter to me? And for, to me, to push me to figure out how that actually does impact life. When they walk out of the room, how does this change how they see the world, how they interact with the world, how they view God? And so it's really pushed me to those places because they are not necessarily making the connections between why our theology and doctrine matters in the world that they're living in. So they're pushing us towards those conversations.
Yeah. And I also see something, and might be incorrect, the reaction of, in one example I saw, rather than receiving the gentle correction, even though it's a gentle correction, rather than receiving correction, it's easy to divorce the whole idea. So in this case, I know this person loves the Lord, trusts the Lord, but it was easy for this person to say that I don't believe in God. I said, don't say that. I know that you do. I know that you made a confession. I know that people heard it. Just because you are not willing to correct or at least not take that word, it may come in the behavior. I may see the correction, but it's just something so fundamentally so different that it has to be contrary. So if you say A, it has to be B. If you say B, no, it's got to be C. So help me to understand why that is also a disconnect. Because when it comes to like making Jesus relevant to them, if I'm trying to teach them one thing and they just, it's almost like going back to those babies. Everything is why? So it's not the why part. Now it's like more of like if you answer that, confer the rather than taking your answer, it's like, okay, let me know. No, this could be, it's, I don't know, it's something different. That it's a personhood, so, you know, and it's almost like I feel my personhood is devalued because the person I'm talking to wants, demanding their personhood, which is not the case. I want to give you the 100% value of your personhood, but also see that I am also a person too. Why that? Because when it comes to the sharing the gospel, for example, you're making a good point. If I'm going to bring Jesus to them, if I'm going to talk about theology, if I'm going to present Jesus, why does it matter to them that he is fully man, fully God? And why should they take my word? And which, of course, goes back to earlier you said trust issue, right? Why should they believe? So help us to understand that a little bit too, if there is anything we can do or change, especially when it comes to God.
Yeah, well, we're wrestling with a lot of things, and we're wrestling with, there's some things that are true about adolescence always, as far as the development process of young people. And then there's some things that they bring in with their generational culture. And so that we're kind of finding the mix of those two things, right? And, yeah. And you know, part of adolescent development is trying to figure out, who am I, you know, where do I fit? And what difference will I make in this world? What's my purpose? Then you add on some of the generational values that are happening alongside this. So you have that, like you referred to before, that low trust piece. Some of it is that we see that our young people today, the most common request I hear from Gen Zers is, hey, why won't anyone listen to me? And I hear from our older generations, I am listening. You're not saying anything. You're like, okay, well, we have a communication problem. That's what's happening, is we're talking at each other and no one is picking up the other side of it. So some of it is actually coming back to uncover some of these miscommunication places. So even words like safe, acceptance, love, enoughness, security, all those have different meanings for people. And so trying to figure out what we mean by that is part of it. When we I'm really talking about is opening the door for questions, letting our young people poke in with their doubts, their concerns, their questions, because there is surveys and different reports have said that Gen Z does not feel like the church is going to be open to their doubts and questions, so they just won't bring them there. When we open those doors, we find out how much they actually are wrestling with these things. They're talking about them or wondering about them. But one thing that, like, I think that we struggle with, when I grew up and you trusted your authority figures and you respected your elders, like those were generational things, authority was hierarchy. And for Gen Z, it's been flattened. So they do not see, they have no problem going to your boss's boss to talk to you about, something, because that's not something that they've been taught to see as a valuable system. They see it as they see flatter as a valuable system because it feels more authentic and approachable. And so when we're like, why aren't you listening to me? They're like, why should I? Right there, we have a generational problem because we are operating in two different systems. So we have to flatten it out a little bit and start to go, okay, come down. We're going to come down and ask you, what are the questions you have? What are the doubts that you have? Where do you feel like I'm not listening to you? How well do you feel like I'm listening to you? Because part of it is we're just trying to establish, can we just have the conversation, period, before we actually get into the nuts and bolts of it? Now, that's all complicated conversation, but honestly, you invite a Gen Zer to see your everyday life, this is going to be the most effective way. Because if you come over to my house, let's pretend you're like, I just got a text from one of our college kids. She just graduated last year. She's coming home. She's like, can I come over to your house and hang out? Absolutely. You know what she's going to see? She's going to see the pile of laundry that's been loaded onto the couch that I haven't gotten to yet. And the kids playing in the playroom and running in back in outdoors and me getting dinner ready. And what she likes about that, and what are most of our Gen Zers like, is they want to see how your faith, how your relationship with God impacts all the parts of your life, not just like sitting in a Bible study, but how does it impact how you parent, how you cook, the decisions you make with your money, the decisions you make with your calendar, how you interact with your spouse. Like when a kid falls down and the water's boiling over the top of the stove, what is your response? They're really wanting to see, does your faith in Jesus Christ actually impact your everyday life? Or is it something we talk about at a coffee shop with open Bibles and then go back to whatever we were doing?
Tanita, I think that's the key, because what you're describing is discipleship. What you're describing, the way you're describing, that's what Jesus calls us to do, right? When he took those men under his wings, it was not like, okay, well, I'll come to the church. When I go to the temple, then meet me up over there, which is our coffee model now. When we go to the banquet, then no, his was 24/7. Hey, the Son of Man doesn't have a bed to lay on, but wherever I am, just you come see where I lay. That's one of the disciples said, like, hey, where do you sleep? Where is your home? Come follow me. Okay, so wherever he goes, maybe he is just laying on the floor, or I don't know where he's gonna lay, but he's willing to open himself even to the most intimate place. Sleeping is one of those places I consider most intimate place. That's personal, private. So he's opening his bedroom, basically, in other words, right? So I think those are the places where we're lacking. When we talk about John in his gospel, he never mentioned his name himself. He doesn't mention, but he says the disciple he loved, and the statements like he was leaning on his chest. The whole idea is there's a relational aspect, intimacy is there. You're opening your house, you're opening your arm, you're opening your life, your heart to them. And I think that's what you are describing. That's what they want to see, which comes back to what you already said, authenticity, authentic, being authentic. When you're authentic, they see it like, okay, this is what actually Tanita is. It's not that person who sits there. Actually, it translates into all of these things, which is brilliant. That's what the scripture has been calling us to do. Because when you start talking, I was like, oh man, it's too much. How are we gonna figure these kids out? On one side, they're asking one thing, and then they ask another thing. What they're asking is it's a multifaceted what they're asking. But the only way you're gonna respond is by showing, not talking. Mm-hmm. It's by showing. Mm-hmm. It's almost like less of speech and more of showing, basically, what it is, and letting them connect the dots. I love it. That's pretty powerful. Yeah. Simple, but powerful.
And I can see, even then we have to explain. Otherwise, I think we run the risk of someone coming over and saying you're an impatient person or you're a really nice person, and they put it in your personality characteristic instead of, you know, if dinner is burning and my kid runs in with a, you know, scabbed knee, what I have to work hard at saying, hey, this is when I pray. This is when I go, Lord, help me figure out what to do first. Help me be calm, so that they see it. Otherwise, they just assume you just handle things really well. Or they can say, like, they can see me, you know, if I'm getting flustered, and go, this is the place I need the Lord to work on with me. Like, this is the place he's teaching me right now. So they can see you process those things out loud instead of just thinking that's how you are.
Yeah, that's awesome. Brilliant. Yeah. Jesus got to shine in both places, in our lows and in our highs, right? Mm-hmm. Gratitude should go to him, and also our plea should go to him too. In both places, people need to see, especially Gen Zs, needs to see that we can, he's our refuge no matter where we are. That's awesome. So you use the example of the parable of the prodigal son. Would you please show us how this example reveals the difference between how the generations approach faith and God?
Which I actually stole from David Livermore in his Cultural Intelligence book. But he shares, he asked a question in a class I was in and said, why did the prodigal son starve? And, you know, as an American, I was so quick to raise my hand, right, and say, because he spent all of his money, right? Mm-hmm. And he starts to point out, hey, there's actually three reasons why he starved. And depending on your cultural background, you may answer that question differently. Because there was a famine in the land, which is another reason he went hungry, and no one gave him anything to eat, which is another reason. So I said for our Gen Zers, it may be that when we ask the prodigal son, why did they go hungry, that we're quick to say, oh, he spent all of his money. But if our Gen Zers, who may be focused on acceptance and justice and caring for those in need, they may go to, well, because no one gave him anything to eat. They're both correct. They're both answers that are in the scripture. But sometimes when we are looking at the gospel and we're talking about matters of doctrine or theology, and we're trying to share with our young people, we focus in on one point. That's a contextualization, that is because all gospel presentations are contextualized. Like there, we focus on one point and we're missing some other points that are also true and also, but what may hit our Gen Zers better, may hit their hearts better. It's also, you could use the example of even just talking about the death of Jesus on the cross. You know, did God sacrifice his son, or is the Trinity participating as God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit? Well, both are true, but they definitely translate different to different communities, different cultures, different time periods of what is the most relevant to the listener that makes sense to them.
Trust seems to be the big issue. We've been talking about this, all of this, even whether it's we're talking about Jesus or we're talking about everyday life with Gen Zs. Trust seems to be a big issue. What would help lead Gen Z to God? Because it's God is all about trusting, right? Putting your faith in him. So what will help lead them to Jesus?
Man, if I had the answer to that, I could make $1 million probably. But right? This book is the best I could do because it is all overlaid with one another. And what's interesting is every interview I do, you'd be surprised at how many people pick different aspects. And they're like, well, it seems like safety is the thing, or it seems like goodness is the thing. It's crazy because people are again, viewing through a lens that makes sense to them. And same thing with our Gen Zers. They may pick one of these values or questions and say, this is the most important one. And you might talk to someone else and say, no, this is important. Because they all impact one another. If we're going to pull back and say, what do we really need to do? We need to pray really hard for our young people. This is a work of the Holy Spirit that it opens up. I have learned that I need to move slower. They're moving more slowly than I'm used to. As someone who's been in youth ministry since 1998, it's just, they've got a lot of questions, low trust, a need for belonging and acceptance. They carry a lot of pain. There's a lot of the crazy level of mental health issues. It's unlike anything I've seen. I hate that I'm unsurprised when I hear about suicide these days. And so there's a piece of just understanding that they are facing a world with active shooter drills and a pandemic that dropped in the middle of their development. And there's a lot of things we don't understand. So because I think the best place to start is, I don't understand. So let me move slowly. And if you say to a Gen Zer, I don't understand, but I really want to, will you help me? That humility by itself moves our young people closer to us.
I like
weepy now.
I like the word, humility. I think that's where we are lost. In many ways, I think that is making them drift away from us, because I think somewhere along the way, even as I'm doing this interview, I was like, and you begin to talk about mental health issues and those things. And one time, part was the part of me was like, just I went to things. I got over. They should get over there, right? That's one response. But the other response is, but I never had to do those drills. I never had, as a child, I never dealt with the whole world shutting down. I never dealt with all those things. So it has affected them. It has changed their social growth. I was not restricted to not going out. I was not restricted. I was not exposed to internal, these gadgets and stuff. It's all of these things. There are so many. It's not just one. So we need to have actually, not just show it, actually, indeed, we need to have this humility where we take a lower posture. And as you said, slow down, move slow. If they are moving slow, there's a reason. But yet, everything is under the sovereignty of God, is it not? So it's a confusing concept for people. That is, if he's sovereign and has control over everything, then how could he allow all of this? What would be a few action steps that youth pastors, this is a Christian podcast, so youth pastors, campus ministry leaders, or even parents can take this week? So what would be a few action steps that all these different people groups that connect to Gen Zs or young people can take away?
One is a question that I learned from Kara Powell over at the Fuller Youth Institute, which is to ask your young person on a scale of 1 to 10, how's your mental health today? Now, part of it is because mental health is the top topic globally that young people at Gen Z wants to talk about, but most of us are not addressing it. But also, they're not limiting that to a psychological, dynamic. When you say 1 to 10, how's your mental health today? Not only can our Gen Zers give you a number pretty quickly, but you say, tell me why it's that number. They'll tell you about their whole day. They'll tell you about relationships and when they woke up and how they were feeling and how their tests went. I mean, they'll tell you everything, but it's just it's language that they're more comfortable with. If you use mental health, then how was your day? You'll get fine. What'd you learn? Nothing. But if you say 1 to 10, how was your mental health? 8. Why isn't it 8? They'll tell you about, they tend to tell us more about their days when we use that question. You look like you're interested in that. You're curious.
No, very interested. You're right. That's my go-to is always, how you been doing? Or how's your day? How you been doing is usually what I say. But you're right. That's interesting. That is very interesting. Because to me,
it's been
mental health is very limited to. Yeah. To me, mental health means your stress.
Yes.
And to me, when I see a kid, I mean young people, to me, it's like, why they shouldn't be stressed. I know that I'm laughing, but that's actually how my brain works, that, well, they're not working. They're not like carrying all the burden. But after talking to you, it makes sense why they will be stressed, because their stresses are not related to job and employment and the boss and all the other things. Their stresses are coming from just being, which goes back to need for belongingness, just being there. That's interesting.
Well, and part of it's language. Like, just think about it. If you said, how's your heart? I would not look and say, oh man, I am like at 80 beats per minute. Apparently my heart rate is elevated. I'm excited to be here right now. Like, you would say, that's not what I'm asking you, right? So that's kind of the same way. It's just a language piece. When we say, hey, how's your mental health today, to a young person, they are hearing a different question than maybe our older generations are hearing.
Wow.
And if they say, why are you asking me? This is so out of character. You can say, I don't know. I heard a podcast. I'm trying something here. And even just that vulnerability would say, I'm trying to connect with you on your level, but can you help me out? And that actually shows a lot of care for the person in front of you.
Wow. That's so interesting. So as we close out, is there anything else you would like to add to this conversation?
I would say any figuring out how to communicate with Gen Z is a challenge. And don't be afraid of big conversations happening through a screen. That is, we've had a lot of Gen Zers who say, I feel like I'm really vulnerable if I'm talking to you face to face. I feel more comfortable if I can text you or share it through an app. That's not weird for them. Their technological world, their digital world, and their real world are blended into one. And so they don't see that as different. It's for older generations. It's similar as when we used to go for a drive for big conversations because we just couldn't look eye to eye, but you could look out the windshield. So don't be afraid of using screens as part of your conversation. And there's even, if you want to take it a step further, there's something called the Between You and Me Journal that's on Amazon or any other book places that have taken a step further for our young people and our parents or adults and mentors who want to connect but are having a hard time communicating. It offers prompts that people, so you're writing to one another and passing this journal back and forth. And I've tried it. I've heard it from other parents. Actually, I tried it because I heard it from a mom who said, my teenage daughter just feels a lot of shame that she can't talk to me. Like she's really uncomfortable talking in a conversation. And so they found this as a way to help in their conversation or the relationship because it was a medium that they both could enter into.
Is it digital? What is it?
No, it's a paper
that you just write and then you give it back and forth?
And you give it back and forth. So I have one with my 10-year-old that's age appropriate for him. And it's been really fun. My 8-year-old said, can we have one too? So I have one for each of my kids that's age appropriate. So maybe like, hey, what's your favorite dessert? And, you know, what do you like about me? So you get to write what you like about your kid. But it's just another way to say, hey, there's more than one way to communicate. So if however you're doing it isn't working right now, try something different.
You're right. If listeners want to get in touch with you or find your books, what are the easiest ways?
My website, tanitamaddox.com. You can message me there. You can book a Zoom with me there or on social media, Dr. Tanita Maddox. You can message me there also.
Perfect. Great. Our listeners can find all of this in the episode's description or on our website or our podcast website as well. And for the last thing, because we talk about heavy topics, and currently this one is pretty heavy. I didn't think about this being this heavy, thinking about mental health and so many layers of disconnection. Anyhow, because we talk about heavy topics, I would like to ask you to tell us a joke to lighten the mood.
You know, it's so funny. I was trying out jokes with my kids last night in preparation. And I just have like, you know, my big go-to, of course, is like, why was 6 afraid of 7?
Why?
Because 7, 8, 9, but now I can't do it anymore because of the 6, 7 situation.
Yes,
you know?
I that's why I did this.
Yep. It's everywhere,
man. 5 years old are crazy. It doesn't matter whether we say 6 or 7, as soon they hear that, it's just insane. But I got it. You're right. I will laugh with you. You go ahead, ask me. Forget about this cultural right now thing going on. Just tell me the joke. Just assume that nobody knows about 6, 7. Go ahead. I'll listen to your joke.
All right. Why was 6 afraid of 7?
Why?
Because 7, 8, 9.
There you go. Good job. Thank you. Thank you so much for being on the show. Again, that was Dr. Tanita Maddox. And thank you to all our listeners. We truly could not do this without you. If you learned something, have a topic suggestion, or would like to leave us feedback, drop us a note at oururbanvoices.com. Be sure to subscribe to the show and leave an honest review wherever you listen to your podcast.
You've been listening to Our Urban Voices with Dr. Alphonse Javed, which presents Christian narratives through diverse voices that impact urban ministry.